All right. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we'll get started where everyone else does. As far as earliest childhood memories, what are we getting into as a kid?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things about me was I actually started a company when I was 12 years old and sold items in a video game.
Well, there you go. What came before that?
Well, before that, I lived in this small place in Staten Island, New York.
Okay.
5 years old. Just a normal kid going to school. Had my parents with me, of course. Lived in a 2-bedroom apartment. A little bit later, had a brother born, and we're sharing room until we finally moved into a larger place when I was about 8. When we did the typical New York move from New York to New Jersey, you either go from New York to like Long Island or, okay, you know, or maybe even Connecticut or New Jersey. So we were the people that moved to New Jersey.
So what's the reason usually for the move? Is it just because you want to get away from the city, or what's going on there?
Well, you know, it's kind of a natural progression in life. So my parents had me when they were 22 years old.
Okay.
So my folks are pretty young. And when they had me, you know, they were still kind of trying to make it out in the world. My dad was a contractor since I'm 5. So
okay,
he started off doing electrical work, had his own electrician company with a partner. That ended up not going well for whatever reason, and then started his own GC company, which kind of leads into my story later. He was saving, he was working his butt off, finally saved up for a house, and mm-hmm, you know, New Jersey was where we ended up.
So what does that move look like? So were we deep in the city, or what was going on before we moved?
Yeah, I mean, we were in a really nice neighborhood in Staten Island. I mean, if I look back at it now, it probably wasn't as nice as I'm remembering. But, you know, it was a nice neighborhood. There's plenty of kids on the block. I used to hang out outside, play stickball,
okay,
you know, flag football, tag, whatever, everything under the sun, manhunt, you name it, right?
Yeah.
At 5 years old, I mean, times are a lot different today. You know, we don't typically let our 5-year-olds roam around the streets, but at 5 years old, I would, you know, roam around, play outside, walk to the store, buy a stick of gum. You know, it was a lot freer than it is today, unfortunately. But, you know, as I kind of look back at that, a lot of pleasurable moments, right, as being a kid and getting to play outside and things like that, and being around a guy who does construction. So, you know, you pick up a lot of things along the way.
Yeah, I always ask people that question, and it seems like there's a not necessarily a distinct time, but there is some people I've had on the podcast that are like, yeah, no, like I was inside, I was either at a sport, or like it was very specific where they were at. So we're moving, when we're in school around middle school time, are we into academia? Do we like sports? What's going on?
Yeah. Middle school time, I was a big fan of football. Okay. I played football and baseball. And so those are the two sports that I liked. I like both, but I would say that I tended to gravitate more to football. You know, baseball is a little bit slower of a sport. Football is pretty fast and exciting. So I was into that. I was switching between running back and wide receiver. And so, you know, I really enjoyed that time period as well.
Mm-hmm. So are you playing full contact then? Is it just helmet? What's going on there?
Full contact. And you know, our team was really good. We ended up making it to the state championship. We lost, which was a very sad affair, but we made it that far. So that's always exciting. And so, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. So was school more of like a social thing, or did we also like some classes as well?
Do we also like some classes? You know, it's funny because you ever play that game, are you smarter than a fifth grader?
I've watched it and I'm like, there's no chance.
You know, if I look back at that, like what was I actually learning, right? Probably not stuff that I typically utilize today in the everyday world. No, I mean, I was always a good student. I got good grades, at least until high school when I started goofing around a little more, but you know, middle school, I was a straight A student. I was probably a little more socially awkward back then. Mm. And that's kind of where I kind of got my, footing, started making a lot more friends. So, I think middle school is that kind of transition period for me.
Okay. So you mentioned at 12, you started your own company. What was that?
Yeah. So it was called D2Deals.com.
Okay.
And basically what I did was this was kind of around when eBay started to really take off. I started noticing that there were like items inside a video game that I liked to play at the time that were for sale, right? So okay. I just had this weird idea of contacting this person that I noticed had a lot of these items.
Yeah.
And I asked them, you know, like, how do they have so many items? And basically it ended up being this gentleman from Singapore.
Okay.
He responds back to me that he duplicates them and then he sells them for a fair price. So I was like, okay, well, what if I buy a lot from you? You know, what if I buy more and then sell them for the same price you're selling for, but I'm in America. So, yeah. You know, I would promote to Americans. And he ended up liking the idea. So, I mean, my parents did not like the idea because after the first couple phone bills of calling, you know, from New Jersey to Singapore was like insane at the time. Right. I ended up like actually making a very successful business, started having some employees work for me and, you know, fulfilling orders. And I mean, at 12 years old, it was actually hilarious now that I look back at it.
So you were making in-game items physical or what?
No, basically, you know, let's say you had a character in the game.
Got it. Right?
And you, instead of trying to find this item that could take you, I don't know, 100 hours, right? You just paid for it. Maybe it was 10 bucks.
Gotcha.
And yeah, I just gave it to you for that $10.
Okay. So is this him just playing it and then he'd send them to you or did you actually play the game as well just to get more and stuff like that?
No, he actually was like duplicating the items. That I don't know how, but he was there's actually like a whole market for this. Like apparently this program was worth over $1 million at the time. But essentially, they were duplicating the items,
yeah,
and then just selling them, right? So it was just straight profit,
right?
And for me, you know, I didn't really have any overhead because I'm just using my, you know, 1996 Dell computer,
yeah,
with a dial-up connection, right? And I'm just going on and selling items in a video game. I actually taught myself how to build a website.
Okay,
you know, it wasn't good. It was a black screen with blue links, but. This was in the early 2000s when a black site with blue links and a PayPal link, it wasn't really fishy at the time. Right. So it started working. And then as we started to, you know, grow as a company, I then paid like web developers to make it look really nice and professional. And that's when, you know, things started to take off. And I actually ended up selling that website, you know,
how much did you sell it for?
14. At that time, I think I sold over $2,500.
Nice.
The rights to the name of the website.
What's the game? Is it Warcraft? Like what game?
Well, it is made by the same company, but it was called Diablo 2. So it was another Blizzard
game. Phenomenal. I was playing Diablo 3 when it came out, and they had a cash marketplace instead of just like in-game currency. And
yeah.
Within the first week. They closed it down because it was just getting absurd. People were selling daggers for like 10 grand.
Well, it was, I wouldn't say that I directly caused that idea, but you know, like I was selling a lot of items, you know,
yeah.
I got so big where I was literally in every single, you know, you would have different regions, right? Of US yeah. East, US West. I was in every region except Asia because, you know, the partner, if you will, that he's Asia was his. So, you know, we started just selling a lot and it actually got to the point where I think Blizzard, the company
yeah.
had to patch like the ability to duplicate these items. They like finally figured it out and stopped that. And then all of a sudden it was like, all right, well I'm going to sell the stash I have, but it's going to get a lot harder to continue to buy them.
Right.
And so, you know, I also hired a programmer to build me an advertising machine. So like I bought the CD keys and yes. put it into this machine and it would just rotate the CD keys and keep posting ads for the website. I mean, this got really, you know, this got really complex at 12 years old, I promise you. from there, you know, they patch the ability to have these bots go in and advertise. So that obviously without the ability to advertise, without the ability to duplicate, it became very difficult to carry on this business. I ended up just selling the website name and, you know, moving on with my life. But it was, you know, it was a very exciting and interesting time.
That's super
at
exciting.
That time.
What were you doing with the cash?
Going to what was cool at the time, Hollister and, you know, Express and, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, I probably saved some, but for the most part, you know, I just was spending it on clothes. And if I wanted to go to the movies, I didn't need to ask my parents for $20 to go. I just went. So, you know, there was financial freedom as a 12-year-old, you know, is the best way I can really describe that. So
did you have to pay taxes on that?
You know, you bring up a very good question. Should I have paid taxes on that, or did I have to pay taxes on it?
Are we past the statute of limitations, or do I have to delete this part of the podcast?
You know what? You can leave it up. To be honest, I don't recall if I ever did pay taxes or did not. But you know,
I think that's on PayPal. They're supposed to send you tax information. I feel like we'll put it on them.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, but it couldn't have been that much anyway.
Yep. So we're balling out. We sell the website. What are we going to after that? Are you like, hey, like I just want to be an entrepreneur, or did things just go back to normal? What was going on?
You know, after that, I started getting into high school, right? So the focus was just more on trying to figure out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, you know? And so in high school, I was, you know, unfortunately, we had that transitional period in middle school where I was trying to find my footing and learn how to, you know, make friends and not be as socially awkward, right? So in high school, you instead of being in the middle, you know, I'm kind of all extreme, where I was trying so hard to be goofy in classes and be funny. And, you know, I think that I paid a little too much attention to that aspect than I did taking school as serious.
Okay.
And so wasn't, you know, not that I studied a lot in middle school. I was always pretty good at grasping concepts and, you know, doing well on tests, but because I wasn't paying as much attention in class, I wasn't really learning those concepts. So, then I was going back home and trying to hang out with people instead of taking school seriously. So, you know, that's when I went from an A student to a B student, you know, and heck, some classes I probably even got a C on, right? So I didn't apply myself as well as I could, you know, as well as I could have or should have. And so, you know, that was a big learning curve for me, you know, going through high school. And I think, you know, look, we learn from our mistakes and our experiences, and, you know, we turn that around.
So when... was there somebody that you saw that was more or less being the class clown that you're like, hey, I want to be like that person? Or what brought you to do that in high school?
I think I was emulating people that maybe I met in middle school, right? That, you know, always seemed to have a lot of friends, or, you know, was a considered a popular kid or something, you know? But yeah, I think that was, you know, more or less emulating people. You know, growing up, I was always this very nice kid, you know, and because of that, I was in situations where I might be bullied because, you know, I didn't maybe have as thick of skin as certain people. And so I think in high school, you know, as you kind of grow through that period, you know, you're trying to figure out how not to get bullied, right? And like, how do you become this person that fits in and no one wants to make fun of? And I think through high school, I was really trying to, I would think I was focusing too much on that aspect. And you know, it's funny, cause when you look back, like who do you hang out with still from high school, right? Like what real meaning did that have? And so, you know, when you're in it, you know, it's hard to have that thought pattern.
Right. If you had to go back and more or less like talk to yourself, what is something you would have wanted to hear just to change a little bit of what you were doing?
You know, focus more on applying yourself, right? Okay. And taking things seriously instead of worried about, you know, how cool you are, if you will. Because I think had I done that, I don't necessarily think that anything would have really changed. You know, maybe I would have went to a better Ivy League school, right? Okay. Or something of that nature. Maybe I would have met different people. You never really know how that would play out, but I just wish that I would have had that opportunity to see what I could have accomplished. Mm-hmm. Whether that accomplishment led to any changes in my life or not is irrelevant, but
right.
just knowing that, you know, put it this way, the stuff that I did not change me for the better. So it would have been interesting to see.
What was the top two things you got in trouble for in high school?
What was the top two things I got in trouble for in high school? Well, I once got suspended twice in one day. You know, so I'm not saying that.
Did you have to serve a double sentence, or did they just not, they didn't talk to each other?
No, I mean, they were pretty pissed, right? They called the whole meeting. My parents had to come. It was the whole thing. But essentially, so it's really funny because I'm an air quality guy and I'm about to tell you how I smoked a cigarette outside of school.
Yeah.
So that's how I got suspended. I'm out in the back smoking a cigarette. I don't know why, because it's just a dumb idea, right? The odds of getting caught when you know you're not supposed to smoke on school, but it just doesn't make any sense why I did the stupid things that I do, you know? But this is something that happened. So I get caught, get down to the principal's office, get suspended. Okay.
Yeah.
After that, you know, I'm suspended, but also finish out the day. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. So then I'm finishing out the day and I'm like so upset about being suspended that I'm like, you know what? I'm leaving a period early. You know, I need to blow off some steam.
Absolutely.
So I leave a period early and I get caught leaving a period early. So then they're like, you just were suspended this morning and now you're cutting class. I was like, well, I'm very upset. And so I need to just like get out of my own head. Right. And I'm just going to leave. And, they ended up letting me leave.
Yeah.
But then they said that I was suspended again. So there's this whole thing and I come down, but let me tell you this. I ended up kind of like, I would say my senior year, I really started to, I would say, but mature and
yeah,
I want to say maybe mature is the wrong word. I started to come into my own a bit, you know, too strong, right? I don't think I matured until maybe 5 years ago, but I started to, you know, really start to realize that, you know, I'm just being an idiot, right?
Yeah.
And I'm wasting my potential, right? So from that perspective, I actually started to apply myself, started to turn things around. And I actually got the principal that I would say despised me.
Yeah.
To write me a letter of recommendation to go to college. Oh, because I was like, you know what? If I can get her, who absolutely despised me, to write a letter, then that is proof that, you know, I really can turn things around, right? And that, you know, I'm not made up of my mistakes, but it's about, you know, kind of turning my life around from that mistake. And I think that, you know, she was actually, I mean, she was shocked, right, that I asked her for a letter of recommendation. And she actually wrote a really nice one. The tagline was kind of like, you know, if Michael wants to go to your school, I suggest letting him in, because Michael's the type of person who will basically do anything that he puts his mind to, which is a nice way of saying, like, you know, this, if he wants to do something, he's going to do it regardless of what you tell him. So if the fact that he wants to come to your school, you better let him in, which I thought was funny. It was like, you know, it was her way of being as nice as possible, even, you know, all things considered. So,
was it like a movie type turnaround where it was just like, we're sitting in our room and like, it's raining outside and we're like, we got to turn things around? Or was this like a gradual?
You know, I think it was more of a, epiphany, right? I don't think it was gradual. I think it just, I realized one day, you know, that partying and, you know, being social, right, that's not going to equate to anything out in the real world. Yeah. It's just not. And, you know, and I really had that realization that I need to figure out a way to add value to my community, to the people around me, okay, to my family, you know? And I think that's kind of that epiphany that I had. And I realized, you know, when I look back, it's like, I was 12 years old. I sold items in a video game. I had a successful business. That shows some great potential that I'm clearly wasting away. Right. Yeah. So I think from that perspective, I was really excited to, you know, figure out what I was going to do. And I knew that I couldn't figure that out if I kept going down that path.
Mm-hmm. And then as far as like your parents and, being home and whatnot, was home life something where we ate dinner together, or like what was going on at the homestead?
Yeah, home life was definitely, you know, the family where you ate dinner together, you know, and that depended upon my dad, you know, not being at work or getting out of work on time to be home for dinner. But at the very least, you know, that was the attempt, was everybody eats dinner together. You know, there was no cell phones back then. Right. So it's just, you're eating dinner, you're enjoying the company of one another, you're asking questions, how was your day, things like that. So yeah, it was a more structured, you know, family. And I think, you know, for a time period, I was probably more disappointing, because they knew my potential. And I think, they were worried about me, you know, just like any parent worries about someone that they think is, you know, not being who they could be.
Right. And then as far as like the dinners and stuff like that, was nutrition like a topic, or it was more just like meat and potatoes? What are we getting at?
You know, my mom, hopefully my mom never listens to this one, because, you know, there was a lot of fish sticks. You remember those?
So good. Fish sticks. So good.
A lot of fish sticks. My mom, when I was younger, you know, being a new mom, she wasn't the best cook starting out. Right. Yeah. And so the meals were, when I look back, they were like more thrown together, of just like whatever was in a box that you could throw in a toaster oven, right? Or, you know, a microwave. And then obviously, it's not obvious, later in life, she started to really enjoy cooking, and other family members started, you know, sharing recipes, and it became a whole thing. Now she's a really good cook. But, you know, back then, I don't think we knew what nutrition was, you know?
As far as, we'll just say, graduating high school, where do you think your physical and mental health were at that point in your life?
Physically, you know, at that point, I, you know, again, we talked about smoking cigarettes, so I was a smoker, right? So physically, you know, I felt fine, but was definitely causing damage to my body. Mentally, I was mentally immature. You know, again, being bullied younger in life and learning from that experience, I was, you know, very insecure of who I was. And I think trying to emulate other people more than I was trying to be myself. And so, you know, from that perspective, I don't think my mental health was, you know, at the best point possible.
Gotcha. So we're going to college. Did we go to a certain college because they had a good program, or what brings us down that path?
Well, truthfully, yes, it has a good program, but it also was located in Florida.
Hey, no more needed to be said. Understandable.
And so, you know, Jersey to Florida for 4 years sounded pretty good. I actually liked it so much, I stayed for 8.
Hey, there you go. So what was the first year like living on our own?
What was the first year like? Well, you know, just like any other, probably just like any other kid going off to college, everyone kind of comes down with you and, you know, sets you up, if you will. My parents were very supportive. They were paying my rent, I think, the first semester, at the very least, and, you know, helped set me up with some groceries. Gave me a credit card and had a weekly allowance. It was a really nice setup, you know, and I know that I was fortunate to have it. And from there, you know, going through school, eventually they stopped paying rent and told me to figure it all out, right? And so I had to do that. But you know, it was a nice setup, and I think that I took it for granted, you know.
So did you pick up a job while you're at school, or did we just focus more on school?
You know, initially it was focusing on school, focusing on school and, you know, still finding time to socialize. Right. So there was still that balance of, but I was more intentional in college with the school than I was in high school. So that was a good thing. But, I did eventually start getting jobs, and I was getting jobs in the marketing industry.
Okay.
And, you know, like restaurants and bars and nightclubs, or just whatever I can get my hands on.
Yeah.
And it was a good, marketing is always important for anybody, right? You need people to, you need to be able to grab people's attention. So I thought it was pretty, a pretty fun kind of career path at that time, but it was short lived, couple of years. And then I decided to get into other things.
Is that while you were in college still?
Yes.
Okay. So is that you getting like an internship, or are you just going out to companies and saying, hey, I can help you out?
No, it was like literally me and a couple of buddies. One of my buddies, when I had gotten there, already had, you know, this company where they were taking pictures and, you know, for restaurants and stuff and advertising for them. So I started, you know, working with them and came up with some really good ideas to, have some good successes there. Ended up becoming the marketing director of that company.
There we go. What was your most successful campaign?
So there was some restaurants and stuff that, were located further away from UCF, the college. Mm-hmm. And so we came up with an idea to literally rent coach buses and just bus people in.
Okay.
And so, you know, it ended up like the whole idea caught on pretty quick. Yeah. We ended up, I think that we did 15 buses full of people one night, and mind you, each bus fits about 65 people.
Wow.
So, you know, we literally bus like 700 kids, to different establishments, and then the establishments were actually paying us to do that, because obviously that's revenue for them. And then we would take pictures and stuff, and, you know, show that, you know, then they had nice pictures to use of, like, you know, how nice their place is, how fun it is, et cetera, whatever. So, you know, it was a nice thing. And then we developed a mailing list, because in order to get the picture, you had to create an account. You had to provide your email. So then you provide your email and get all these photos, but now we had your email and can tell you the next thing was, right? So it was an interesting concept at the time. And it took off pretty well.
Very cool. So is that what you went to school for? Was it for marketing, or what are we looking for when we're at school?
I went for business, recording arts. I kind of studied a couple of different subjects. I was a pretty indecisive person in college, where I tried something out. I originally started for architecture because I was like, oh, my dad owns a construction company. I'm sitting there in the first day in class, and they're saying, you know, it's a drawing class, and I can't draw. So I was like, well, why do we have to draw? I'm not a good drawer. Right. And they're like, well, you know, because this is how it was done, and, you know, you have to be able to draw plans, but we all know that there's computer programming for that kind of stuff now. So you don't need to actually draw.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty annoyed at the idea of, like, I'd had to learn something that I was never going to use, and then to, you know, for 2 years, and then get, they told me that it was 2 years before I would actually get to the stuff that I would actually use. Yes. So I was like, well, good. I'm not going to be an architect, because I'm not going to waste 2 years of life drawing when I literally can't draw. It's just not going to work.
I took that class in high school, but it was just like half a semester. It was just like a semester or something like that. And we used protractors and all this stuff. I'm like, can I use AutoCAD? Like, it's right over there.
it's right there. So that was, I'm a very impatient person typically when it comes to, especially learning. It's like, just give me the meat and potatoes. I want to know what the information is. I want to dive in. I don't want to learn stuff that I'll never use. Right. So it was very interesting into that perspective. I decided to change to recording arts next.
Okay.
And so that was a fun experience.
What is recording arts?
That's a good question. Recording arts is like sound engineering. The art of, you know, recording things and making them come to life, right? So for example, you may listen to a song on the radio. That song may have 200 different independent tracks that are then blended together to make this entire sound. And so I was learning how to blend all that stuff together. I loved it. I did it for an entire year. Ooh. But then I realized, like, okay, but am I really going to be a sound engineer? You know? And so then switch to the more traditional marketing business programs. And, you know, it just applies a lot better into, you could do anything with that information, because at the end of the day, business is endless, right? Being able to figure out what people need and providing that need is invaluable.
So when we're graduating, is there something that we have lined up? Do you want to start your own business? What's kind of brewing?
Well, so I was a marketing director of that company. So by the time I was done, I decided to stay and continue to see how that came to fruition. But in that industry, especially when you're like in marketing for restaurants and nightclubs and bars and stuff like that, that's like the hospitality industry, right? It's very taxing, to be in that industry, because, you know, you're expected to go and make appearances and do these types of things and put on these events and do all these things. So, naturally, you know, if that's something that you're into, that works. And you know, I was into it for a while, but then, you know, the decision became, can I really start a family? Okay. Right. With all this happening. And so, from that point on, it was like, you know what, I'm going to move home. I learned a lot.
Okay.
I'm going to take what I've learned and I'm going to apply it to the family business.
Gotcha. So did the marketing and all that stuff being out in Florida, did that help build the confidence, kind of find out who we were and just get in front of more people though?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it was invaluable for sure. You know, the things that I've learned, you know, being out on my own and trying new things and trial and error and understanding marketing and how important marketing is to any business, right?
Yeah.
I think it was definitely invaluable for sure.
So we go back home. Did dad say that we could work for him, or what was waiting for us when we got back?
Oh yeah. So I sold him the idea that we'd work, you know, I'd come up, I'd help him grow his company. You know, he had, I don't think he even had a website at the time. So it was just like, I've been doing this for 20 years and it's all telephone book and word of mouth and, you know, no website, no real presence. So I was like, look, here's what I'm going to do. We're going to do all this stuff. I'm going to come up there and, you know, I also want to do like estimating, going into people's homes, like learning about what they're going through.
Yeah.
How do we help them? You know, that type of thing. And so that's what I started doing. And from that point on, you know, I really started to see, you know, air quality and restoration and that whole side of things and how important that stuff was. So I'm glad obviously that I went back and the story is the way it happened, because, you know,
so
hopefully the end comes out nice.
What's the first instance where you're like, this may not be ideal for humans or even the rats to be breathing in?
So when I moved home, it was right around Hurricane Sandy, which happened, you know, in the Northeast. And that's, so, you know, I'm going into people's homes at that point. I'm looking over lab data, which was all very new to me at the time. And I'm, you know, trying to understand, you know, what's going on with these homes, right?
Yeah.
A lot of them, which were already remediated, you know, people were kind of talking about mysterious health issues. And like I said, it was all very new to me and very confusing at the time. And I was like, well, I'd love to see what's going on here. I started doing a lot of research, trying to understand what exactly was happening. But from that perspective, as I started diving into all this, I was like, wow, this is actually way more, you know, impactful to our health than I would have ever imagined. Because previous to that, I never really heard of like mold being a problem or bacteria in people's homes. You just don't hear that stuff.
Yeah. I would say I ever only heard like black mold in school, and that was just because anytime we saw like a vent that didn't look ideal, we're like, oh, it's black mold, we're gonna get a day off or something like that. But so what specifically were you researching other than like how did you start, like what did you start Googling?
What did I start Googling? Well, I mean, you know, first, probably the most elementary thing that I did is like, what is mold, right?
Gotcha.
You know, it's like, I'm there to, you know, people are complaining of mold and all this stuff. And the inspectors seem to think that mold could be part of the problem, causing mysterious health issues. So I'm like, well, what is mold, right? Oh, it's a fungus. Interesting. You know, how does it reproduce? Oh, very, very interesting. It reproduces by creating spores. So I started to connect the dots that, oh, it's like a plant, right? Plants produce seeds, mold produces spores, they aerosolize, they fall down into the dirt for plants. You add water, it becomes a new plant. With mold, it's very similar with the whole adding water aspect. Difference is it doesn't need soil. It could just start growing inside your wall, right?
So
perfect, right? So, you know, then there's the more complicated stuff like mycotoxins. What is a mycotoxin? Well, apparently a mycotoxin is a toxin of the fungus produced by a certain species of fungus as a self-defense mechanism. And they're actually a secondary metabolite. They can attach to spores. They can settle in the dust. Whatever's in your dust essentially has the potential to re-aerosolize and your breathing zone enter the body. And so it was through this research that I realized, okay, so mold is two things. It's an organism and it's a particle. And why it's important to look at that is because that's kind of how I realized that the entire industry of what we were calling mold remediation was really missing the mark.
Okay.
And to put it in perspective, if you just remove, let's say, the organism, but you leave all the particles and toxins, and someone's not feeling well, they're not feeling well because of the particles and toxins that are getting inside the body. If they're still there, they're going to still get inside the body.
Okay.
So it was kind of that perspective that kind of led me down this path of how do we deal with this properly when we're trying to fix somebody's home?
Yeah.
And it's remediation, it's cleaning in the proper sequence. It's prevention, making sure these things don't happen again. And a lot of that stuff is missed. Mm-hmm. When you hire your typical national water restoration or mold remediation company. So that's when I started to see these pattern of people getting sick. That's when I started to realize that, you know, there's a need, right?
Right.
There's a significant need for somebody to evolve the process and create a service that can help people from a health perspective.
So when people are getting sick, are you saying that they're getting allergies, runny nose, headaches, asthma? What's happening?
You know, there's a very interesting wide range of different symptoms that people complain of. You know, when you go inside someone's home, they're saying they have brain fog, chronic fatigue syndrome. They have weird skin issues. I had a woman who, you know, literally had like red marks all over her. She would, you know, show me her sleeve and show me how, you know, there's all these red,
yeah,
crazy red marks all over the place. You know, itchy, dry skin, things like that. Cause it depends. There's over 100,000 different species of mold. Some of them are toxigenic, some of them are pathogenic, some of them are allergenic, some of them produce mycotoxins, you know, so it really makes the problem a little more complex. But you have respiratory issues, you have asthma, which asthma, you know, poor air quality has been known to cause asthma for a long time now, not anything really new. You have what Dr. Bredesen is doing. Dr. Dale Bredesen is, you know, has identified that water damaged buildings can cause inhalational Alzheimer's, the early onset of dementia. So, you know, as we start looking at this, it's like, what I don't think we really know today all the things that it can contribute to.
Right. So when you see this issue, how do you go about solving it? Do you do a test? And then how do you test for it?
Yeah. So there are different types of tests. You know, depending on when this episode comes out, there may be a test that I can direct people to called the dusttest.com.
Okay.
Which is essentially the new way of screening a home. So like, for example, you go to a doctor, you're not feeling well, they're going to do a screen. They're going to check different biomarkers and see what could be wrong. this is a screen for the home, right? Okay. The gold standard for a long time through that industry has been air testing, but air testing only measures like 5 milliliters of air, which is not a lot of air. So if you're doing it, you're checking a really small space inside of a room. And if you're not close enough to the source, it's going to tell you that there's no problems when there very well could be. So the dust screening makes a lot more sense, because anytime you have something in your home producing particles, these particles are going to aerosolize and then settle in the dust of your home.
Yeah.
So if you analyze that dust for some of those contaminants, you'll be able to find it.
So what was the website again?
Thedusttest.com.
And then how does that work?
So the dusttest.com utilizes, it's an at-home test. So you'll get shipped a sample. It'll come with everything you need to collect the dust. It kind of looks like a Swiffer cloth, honestly. You collect it, you put it back in the sealed envelope, you send it off, you send it back off to the dust test. It's going to go to the lab. It's one of the largest labs in the country. They're an accredited lab. They're going to use PCR technology to analyze the dust, looking for the DNA of different things like mold and bacteria and the mycotoxins we talked about earlier. And you're looking for abnormalities to see what is abnormally high that typically is indicative of, you know, there being a source of that particular, you know, water damage scenario creating these environmental contaminants. So it's because so many of these homes, when I walked into them, you know, they were already previously repaired, so that you couldn't tell that there was a problem without laboratory data.
Okay, so it's just hanging out behind the walls, the crevices, wherever.
Right, behind walls, crevices. Not visibly apparent.
Gotcha. So we have a crawl space, and we'll definitely be moved out by the time this airs. We did a regular Amazon mold test. Are those reliable? Is that the ones that you said it's like a small area?
What is that, like a little plate?
Yeah.
They could be reliable, but too, you know, them too, it's just hit or miss. Depends on how close they are to the source. Will they really tell you?
So like we did a couple spots and one next to where we definitely knew it was. And we have a crawl space that floods if it rains too much, because the sump pump is not efficient enough and whatever. Now, is there a certain type of mold that's going to come from that, or where? How do you figure out what type of mold it is? That was a really confusing question. Does water determine the type of mold, or what determines the type of mold you have?
Well, water definitely has an influence on the type of mold, because, you know, there, for example, there are 36 different species that we typically associate with water damage.
Okay.
That more commonly grow in water damage homes. So it does have an impact between the water affecting the indoor. But the plates typically don't tell you what species it is.
Right.
Unless you send those plates into a lab, you know, under microscopy, where they can kind of see, you know, and identify which species it might be, doesn't really give you that. With the dust test, it's all DNA technology. So PCR is analyzing the DNA. So you're going to know exactly what species it is and how much of it is there, which is valuable, because you can then, once you're able to look at a quantity, and it all is based upon the, all the data is basically utilizing a EPA study, because they surveyed 1,000 different homes.
Okay.
And created what you would consider some sort of average, right? And if you know if you're 10 times higher the average on a specific species, or 100 times or 1,000 times, you can have a pretty good sense that something must be in your environment producing those particles that would make you above the norm. Because mold's part of our ecosystem. We're not going to have a mold-free home.
Yeah.
But you don't want to have an abundance of it either.
Gotcha. So I would say I'm fairly sensitive to smells. And once we got two air purifiers, well, to actually just to lay it out here, we did the test. We messaged our landlord, and he's like, you guys can break the lease and leave early, but I'm not going to fix it. We're in the process of moving. We've been trying to move for the last like 3-4 months, but literally everyone's outbidding us on rentals. So it's been exciting. So do air purifiers do anything for mold? Because it really, it drastically helped the smell. And to me, it just felt like when I was breathing in general, like some headaches were gone or I just felt a little bit better. Is that just more of a placebo effect, or do the air purifiers actually help?
I mean, it definitely depends on what air purifier you have, you know, the technology inside of it, how small of a particle does it capture? I mean, these are all like, you know, significant variables. But, you know, if I'm a big advocate for, you know, paying attention to changes in your body.
Yeah.
So if you're noticing the smell is less, you're noticing you're not getting as many frequent headaches, then obviously this is beneficial, right? You want to keep down. You always want to do more things that are working well for you, right? So I think that air purification is kind of like purifying your water, right? You want to purify your water when you can and drink purified water, you know, at any opportunity, right? So purifying your air is creating that same opportunity. If you've ever sat on a couch in front of a window and seen that light, you know, that ray of light pass by and you saw all that stuff flying around, you know, I mean, it's probably a good thing to breathe in, you know, as clean of air as possible.
Okay.
Especially considering like mold, bacteria, viruses, they're all way too small for the eye to see.
Yeah.
So the stuff that you see floating around is stuff that's big. All the little stuff is typically what makes us, it typically impacts our health the most. So that's the stuff that, you know, we really want to be careful of. That's why you want your air purifier to make sure it can capture a small particle.
Okay. So I'm just going to get some personal help here. We're moving to a buddy's basement and they have lots of chickens and goats and what else? They have some geese and ducks. That obviously they're outside. Oh, and they have a bunny. Does being around animals create mold? Does that have more of an adverse reaction or anything like that?
No. I mean, having animals doesn't necessarily create mold.
Okay.
You know, if there's mold in the soil outside, et cetera. So if they're coming in and out of the house, they could be, you know, creating a lot more exposure opportunity for mold and bacteria to come in. But if they're just outside, I mean, you know.
Awesome. We'll keep them out there.
Good. Perfect.
So you figure out all this stuff. There's a real big issue. Do you start an LLC? Like, what's the beginnings of your business?
Well, so after I worked with my dad for a while, you know, really diving into remediation, you know, I started getting to the point of, you know, we're sharing employees. I mean, the stuff that I was doing with mold remediation for his company started to catch on pretty quick because people were excited that, you know, I was desperately trying to figure out how to help the most sensitive people. Right. Yeah. So it's a very small community, typically, you know, people who are aware of mold that, you know, want the best and want to do everything right and aren't feeling well. And so kind of like once you start working in that community, it spreads like wildfire. And so, you know, everyone was excited to speak to me because they were, you know, they had this idea that, you know, I would do whatever it takes to figure it out for them. And that's actually what it became because, you know, every time I would talk to people, they're like, I went through so many professionals. No one knows how to help me. They think I'm crazy. And so I'm like, I just kind of felt this sense of responsibility to just figure it out. And it was through that kind of the company was born. It got to a point where, you know, I am needing more personnel than my dad could provide to give me because, you know, he was running more of the fire restoration end of the business, which is was his kind of bread and butter for, you know, 20 years. And so it just got a little bit too challenging. There was an opportunity for me to purchase a company and, you know, kind of it's more like a, yeah, as a purchase, asset sale, however you want to look at it. And it was this company called All American Waterproofing. So I rebranded it to All American Restoration. This kind of gave us a little bit more wiggle room to figure out, you know, we can kind of go in any route that we want, especially as we start to continue to evolve this. So, you know, that was May of 2017, officially on my own. And it grows pretty rapidly, you know, and we get to a point where just a couple of years ago, we're now talking about creating products and going global. And, you know, you can't really, all American restoration in London may not be as effective, right? So it just came time to rebrand. You know, I know I'm missing a lot of cool information in between, you know, starting and where we are today, but
sounds like we'll need a part two for that.
Yeah, because it gets really, there's a lot of really exciting things that happen. And, you know, I think it's all towards the premise of, I start to get a lot of clarity around, you know, look, this is a big problem. There's not many people trying to solve it. You know, it leads to me writing a book, which you can probably see behind me, yep. Mole Medic. It leads to me starting a nonprofit called Change the Air Foundation. We rebrand to Home Cleanse. There's just a lot of exciting things happening. And it was all built around this premise of, you know, I always think about this, like, what if I never had saw this opportunity to look further, right? But now we're out there trying to do some amazing things. We've helped over 1,000 families get back into their homes that thought they would never be able to live in their homes again, dealing with all chronic illnesses. We had a woman who literally was getting nutrients through a GJ feeding tube to keep her alive because she was not able to eat. She was bedridden. I mean, super sick. Within 7 days of moving out of her house for us to go and do the work.
Yeah.
She's removing the tube. She's walking again. She's, you know, no one's ever perfect, like a light switch, but you know, like just that alone in 7 days is a miracle. Right. Yeah. So as I really start to see just how wide reaching this is, I'm just really excited to be able to create that opportunity to fill a need, create that awareness and educate people and try to save people from making some of the mistakes that my clients have in the past.
So they get the test. You're going to have to say it again because my memory is terrible. Maybe it's the mold. but what's the name of the website again?
Brain fog. You know, it is a thing. So name of the website is thedusttest.com.
Okay. So you get that done. It comes back with blank things. Do they call you or what's the next step after that?
So basically you get a test done. The test is looking for abnormalities. You're either going to get peace of mind or you may become educated in the fact that something's elevated. You may want to consider trying to figure out what it is, how to fix it, et cetera. From there, this is a screen. So just like when you go to the doctor, you get a screen. They're like, okay. Yeah. It's like getting blood work done. All right. There's some things that are a little off. Let's look further into that. Right. So the next step would be, if you need it, the next step would be hiring, getting an inspection done to try to more properly locate where the abnormalities are coming from. From there, we figure out that your crawl space is a problem, right? We then give you an estimate to remediate the crawl space. If you'd like to hire us, great. If you don't, because you're going to do it yourself, fine. At least we help you find the problem in the first place, right?
Right.
So from there, you get remediation done. You'll likely want to retest just to make sure it's all done properly. Nothing is missed because we are talking about microscopic particles and toxins. Yeah. And you know, you fix your place is fixed. You're on your way, right? What's interesting is we work with over 100 different doctors. We've really gone into this situation where we're seeing correlations between what's going on with their home, what's going on with their body. Yeah. For example, you may have aspergillus. Aspergillus produces ochratoxin A. You may test your body with your doctor and find you have high levels of ochratoxin A. We may test your house and find that you have high levels of aspergillus that produces that toxin. So
there we are.
This is all stuff that's typically never been done before because most people, they just call a guy, they do an air test in the center of the room. They say it's okay. Right. They don't go to a doctor because, you know, when you go to a doctor, they just want to do blood work. They're not thinking about your environment, although they should. And then, you know, you get to this point where now we're talking about bridging that gap between science and construction and your home and how your body is feeling or doing medically, right, inside the home. So it's exciting to see what data comes out of that. And, you know, as we continue to see the correlations and we produce these case studies, hopefully we can, you know, for generations to come, we can educate people on whatever is actually happening here that's causing these illnesses. Cause I personally, I think that there's a lot more mysterious illnesses than we know of today that can be a problem when you're in a not healthy environment. I mean, it makes sense, right? The largest route of exposure, if you didn't know, is inhalation.
Yeah.
So then we learned that through COVID too. We all got sick through inhalation, right? This is the largest route of exposure for anything, right? So we have to really make sure that we're, you know, paying more attention to our environment, not less.
So if we look at 100 houses, we run the test, how many on average are testing positive for enough for remediation?
I wouldn't be able to answer that because we haven't, you know, all the houses that I've ever tested or been a part of, they're 100%, right? Because calling me for a reason. The thing is, if we were to just survey all these other homes, the largest home survey that I could point to was done in 1994 by John Spengler.
Okay.
And John found that 50% of the homes that he surveyed had a history of water damage. And 80% of those had visible signs of mold. He didn't do any testing, just visible signs of mold. So that's 80%. Could the other 20% be hidden signs of mold? Sure. We don't know. He didn't test.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the point of it is that obviously there's a problem that was identified. And, you know, we understand more today that the amount of water damage homes is probably even more than that.
Yeah.
And now that we can kind of do something about that by, you know, getting more data. Right. And I think we're excited about the dust test, not only from a consumer standpoint, to be able to help consumers figure out if their home could be contributing to, you know, or preventing them from having the optimal health goals that they're looking for.
Right.
But also from a data perspective, to have that data, to be able to study that data, I think is going to be very valuable for the future of society, if you will.
Awesome. So what is the date that is going to be launched?
August 1st.
August 1st. Perfect. So to more or less wrap things up, is there, if anybody's going to follow you or just go along with the journey, where would they find you on social media and website wise?
So on social media, you can follow me pretty much everywhere, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, you name it. It's The Mold Medic.
Okay.
Just like the name of the book. If you're looking for, you know, a website, maybe you want to reach out to me or something, you can go to themoldmedic.com. And you know, you want to check out Home Cleanse and learn all about the products and services we're creating to, you know, help people identify and remove contaminants from their home and improve their air quality, go to homecleanse.com.
Awesome. Love that. So we'll finish up with the same two questions that everyone gets. As far as health goes, what's your definition of health? Not necessarily the dictionary definition, but what is health to you?
Health to me is holistic, you know, and I think it's the sum of its parts, right? And I think a lot of people forget that, right? Because for most people, in this, I'm kind of coming through this just by talking to people, but for most people, when you survey what health is, they'll say like, oh, it's, you know, eating good, it's exercising, right? But there's so much more to health, right? Because you have air quality, which is probably one of those things that's not even on anyone's list, right? Yeah. Let alone when it should be at the top of the list. You know, you have things like air quality. You have things like what we put on our skin, right? We have tons of plastics and chemicals and stuff that we put on our skin all the time that we're just not aware of. Mm-hmm. We have food and not having a great diet or not eating, you know, properly. You have water, not drinking enough water, not getting clean water, right? And we start to look at all of this together, including genetics, epigenetics, and all of that. That's really what health is. And so if you want to be healthy, mm-hmm. you have to look at the sum of its parts, all of it holistically, and try to improve in each area that you possibly can.
Love that. And then what's something from your life that you think people listening to the podcast would be able to take away as a positive?
What's something for my life? Well, you know, my hope is that, you know, from learning through my journey, which, you know, hopefully people find is genuine, you know, understanding a little bit more about me as a person, and why I've gotten here to, you know, try to promote awareness and spread awareness, you know, it's really from this standpoint of, you know, seeing something that was like too big to put back into a bottle, you know? Yeah. And I think that's the way to describe it. It's like, I don't even care if you hire me or not, or if you ever follow one of our companies, but if I was able to inform you enough to make better decisions when you're renting or buying a home or whatever you're doing, and being able to convey the message that air quality is a very big importance, you know, the largest route of exposure is through inhalation. I think it's really important that people kind of get that message, because I've just seen so many people suffering, you know, and I just don't want to see that anymore. I really want to see people start to, you know, take the right steps to identify it, prevent it, you know, stop it from taking over their lives. And like, it has so many of people that I've worked with, and that's the biggest takeaway that I hope people get. And I hope people see that genuineness of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.